Pickle Walnut. Except we can't grow the walnuts because there is cool. We do make pickled walnuts in Tasmania quite a lot, but not much of our walnuts is made in pickled walnuts. Frogs, if we brought in Rana Pippian, they're very big. But they eat all the other frogs. They're pretty carnivorous. Bay we can grow. Yeah, we grow a few bay trees, enough for the community. Yeah, we could go into insect breeding too. One of the things you've missed out on is glasshouses, and that's critical to this district because there are so many plants that we could grow that are in high demand locally. They're all imported, which is no competition, and we've reserved 5 3-acre glasshouse lots on the swamp. And glasshouses would be a major income sector here. No, growing in glasshouses would be a major income in this district.
What sort of crop would you crop?
Well, just with a very mild amount of glasshouse, you can get into all the subtropical crops. You can get into ginger and bananas and so on. We need very little shelter from this howling wind chill to go into subtropical crops like this. We can just on grow bananas outside. They just can't quite. So we can easily grow them underground. And we can easily grow ginger and all that from underground. Pineapple, ginger, pear, bananas. Just lots and lots of crops. There's a lot of livings in glass there.
You're looking at cost effectiveness of production then. You've got to really compare whether it's worth growing that, given the capital outlay, compared to the 40-year cost.
Our glasshouses amortise in one crop in 1 year. See? We've run three trials. We paid the glasshouses off in the first year's crop. So after the first year, our glasshouse is free. And then we're not looking at competing with anybody. So if you stand a year where you sell your crop off, you pay your glasshouse off. And after that, you're running free. So we've done all that.
On what crops did you do on the trial?
We just ran tomatoes and peppers and what's those big purple guys? Eggplants.
And they're all in together or in
row? Oh no, all different things we put in, and we did winter crops in there like snow peas and other things. So we had no problem amortising a glass house within 12 months of building it. Yes, oh well no, not really, no we didn't include labour, we all put it up and ran it for a few years and then I paid it off in the first year. I think we got an $800 profit on top of that. Well, it depends on how they're grown, I suppose. We grew it in seaweed, in the glasshouse. We did an organic glasshouse too. Seaweed and liquid.
Very hard to grow organic in glasshouses at all. Well, fungus includes
the didn't have a bit of trouble. We just didn't have any trouble. We've got a banana tree since the stand up. We've popped a few small banana trees in Ted's glasshouse. They just sit there for me. The long day lengths in winter? Short day lengths in winter. They handle it all right. There's no problem with things. So we can grow most things just under a bit of cover, really. In fact, in a sense, you don't even need a glasshouse. You need walled sides more than wind shelter. Wind chill factor is the largest factor. The temperatures here are fairly modest. The wind is horrific. We think we'll do earth wall glass houses. Mm. And we'll get the drop, the big earth walls, and then just glass top them. Really pit glass houses, I guess. That's a big one here, I think. Seems to work well most climates like this. Okay, well, there's a lot of occupations. Now, a lot of them are totally impractical suggestions, which you yourselves realise. And what you must do is put yourself right there where you're putting the other person and see if you'd like to do it. Now, some of it, of course, is easy to do. Easy to bag off mud and soil mud or clay. on demand. And maybe the seaweeds, glasshouses, all those things are good to do. Fish, a lot of us would enjoy doing that. Some of the things are experimental and need market research and some small trials, and you have to fund those a bit. A lot of them can be pre-sold with no problem at all. You could get orders to set up your capital investment. Perhaps if you look at it closely, you will see that there are a lot of occupations possible on a patch of land. Earth resources have to be very carefully investigated on land. Something that hasn't been stressed enough in any literature you can buy on land planning. I'm sure it hasn't. The bulldozer is as though it never happened in terms of landscape planning and landscape design. Really strange.
So, do you have any restrictions here in terms of limits to extractive industries on the swamp?
No, we have commercial premises for we can do anything in. They're unlimited as to what we could do in processing, so the swamp, we can do anything at all in primary production. Mm. There's no limit.
You grow flowers, such as those
cut flowers can be a whole research area, actually. It doesn't take up much space and there's a lot of yield. I'll give you an anecdote, a true anecdote. Happened just at Gemsbrook in Victoria, that a guy who was a clerk bought an old man's land. It was 8 acres, I think, beside a friend of mine, and he came up on a Friday. It was clerk did. He put the deposit on. It was only $25,000 with an old house at Gemsbrook. And on Saturday morning, had a knock on the door, and there was a strange man there. Oh, and he roamed around his 5 acres. It was sold as an estate, a deceased estate. A bit of a broken down house, and he thought he'd get into it tomorrow on Saturday and he'd start clearing it out because it was heavily overgrown. He'd get in, you know how it is when you get an old garden, you're going to get to with a saw and axe and really get it cleared out. But on Saturday morning, before he'd sort of got up and got into it, he had a knock on his door and it was an undertaker and said, "I've come for my flowers." And the guy said, "Oh, well, I've just bought the property. I don't know about your flowers. You go get your flowers if you like, or I'll help you." And they got some flowers, and the guy gave him $50, and it happened 5 times that day. Right, that was on the Saturday. This old fella had worked out a garden which flowered all the year. Every undertaker in Melbourne beat a pass to his door, came up and got the flowers, and the old guy lived in these depressed circumstances worth a fortune, apparently. So the bloke resigned on Monday, and he's never worked since. And his income is about $500 to $800 a weekend. And he didn't ever pick that axe up. He really got his flower books out. He went out and studied that garden and he found he couldn't improve it very much at all, and he just looks after it. So lucky lad, lucky lad. So that's a true story. I was along the road, working along the road from there, putting in a property, and went and talked to a guy. He said, "This is it. I resigned on Monday morning." Already he had more money than he ever made as a clerk, and he didn't have to go anywhere. So he's going to turn into another old man living in a broken down house surrounded by flames.
I think he's expanded that now.
He has, probably has. I think he intended to. He thought he could expand. The old boy had about 3 acres under shrubs and flowers.
I think he's got more like 5 to 10 acres now. Under
probably there. Has. Mm. Yeah. Yes, the planet's in Prostanthra. Yeah. Oh, yeah, there's a lot of flowers we can put in. We, however, want to look at this as very much a right livelihood place. So we won't can air. So that goes out on the right livelihood idea. And we will limit the amount of flowers. Because it's too close to the town to turn it into a non-productive system.
Well, we were talking last night, I don't think it'd be ridiculous to say that you've got 70 definite jobs there, you know, figures such as...
Well, we figured 27 sure jobs without much development of capital. Mm. Mm.
But I'm sort
so
of
one thing probably to have the jobs is an unpleasant thing for anybody to go out and do them, isn't it? This is... stage where we wrap. We are really interested in this whole project from a philosophical point of view. Where that little thing on the swamp has been circulated around the town. Nobody's come rushing out and say, yes, I'd like to do that job and take it up, although it's empty, it's there.
Amazing.
And we're going to therefore go on quietly and develop the situation into ponds and things up to a point, up to another $30,000-$50,000, that's it for us. And then if nobody comes rushing out to take the jobs, we've discovered something very profound about an area like this which has 4,000 unemployed. They don't want it. Therefore we have to think again. And the swamp either turns into a very pleasant place for a few of us, which it probably would be, or it could support 70 or 80 people in town. Now, in and off the swamp. Now, if it did, it would mean you could buy one of these properties annually around here, I think, from your Commonwealth Fund. Mm. Therefore, there's really no limit to the amount of development. If it doesn't, it means that everything stays exactly as it is. Large number of unemployed, low income, really depressed, deprived people. The computer's there. You can buy programs. There's something you've got. You can buy a program cheap and run it on the computer. There's an income there. Accounting program, whatever you want to do.
Have you been putting a dollar value on the livings when you circulate your newsletter?
No, we don't put a dollar on the livings. It's we worked them out. Well, we worked a dozen or so of them out in some detail, I think. I've worked about a dozen out.
It mightn't be they don't want work, because they can't, they haven't transferred.
Now, wait a minute. Maybe what they want is employment.
That's what they want.
Time and again, people say, well, I'll come and join you guys if you can give me a job. So we don't have jobs. I don't see why we should give you one.
It's the nature of the personality of people. You know how these books are written, How to Make $1 Million, the way I did. Now, I wonder how many people who buy those books can make $1 Million like the original guy who wrote it. Only certain people have that ability to get up and go, I guess, and become captains of industry or whatever. Just go out by themselves.
Well, that's why we're willing to put another $30,000 to $50,000 in. We're willing to put it in, take the nets, catch the trout, say, OK, you can make $12,000. Do you want the job now? It may not.
I think it's just a matter of, judging from that public narrative, he's obviously never walked through the floor, certainly never taken a walk with you through there and seen what is going on. And he just said nothing's going on there. I mean, I just thought, nothing is going on, just looking from the street. But when you walk in there and you start to tell us about it, there's a hell of a lot going on here.
Our books, our system, everything is open to anyone in the town. They've been told that enough times. I've tried to explain it. I don't know whether you have, Andrew, to people in the town. Enough times. There are enough of us in the town for them to ask or to be taken around the swamp. It may be that you're up against some different proposition altogether. Perhaps what they really want is somebody like Alco to come in and set up an industry and sign them on as jobs. Perhaps that's really deep down what they want, what the whole education structure is.
That's what people think
of
the
I think an outstanding example is the seaweed, that you can pick it up and compost and sell it at $12 for 8 kilograms.
I invited the public, I asked the public whether he was coming down for the chat.
There's other little chats we do. We do the World Tree Planting Day and we invite all the town with posters to come for a chat and plant a tree. Also on Friday and Saturday in the local Chronicle we've advertised this course open.
I asked him whether he was coming.
Well, he didn't think he would. You hit the nail on the head though right at the beginning of the conversation on this area though.
Well, maybe not this area, on areas like this, we should say, I think.
I wasn't referring to harmless swamp. It was just a philosophy thing when you opened up on the whole concept of this
common word.
Yeah, common word thing. I can't think of the other word, over the one, incest or something.
You heard about the bloke who didn't know the difference between incest and arson, didn't you? Set fire to his sister.
Yeah.
That's got everything in it, hasn't it?
when you started out, you see, you said that there's this moment of fear when the person breaks out before they suddenly discover they can do the thing, and I think that's the nut of it.
Yeah.
It's something actually that's bothered me personally quite a bit, to actually take the jump off the raft into the water. And then suddenly find
yourself... Oh, yes, I think that's a very proper fear. I don't think it's a very proper fear if you're already living here and not, haven't got much to do. And, you know...
The thing is, though, that what we're sort of talking about, we've got one community here now, a lot of us come from communities that aren't so negative and are quite happy to join in and don't, you know... At various degrees with those fears, and things could take off a lot quicker than, say, maybe, you know, with the opposition in Stanley.
I think you can overestimate the opposition in Stanley. You probably couldn't overestimate the apathy, or whatever.
Stanley reminds me of a lot of country towns.
A lot of country towns.
It is sad that the this is a very general thing. I find it is that's another big one. You don't get much actual active negativism. You get a huge amount of apathy, and actually the enterprise of human being seems to be getting thrashed out of them somewhere along the line. I think it's a very sad thing.
System, would you appeal to
more? I don't know. There's no simple answer to it.
I don't think it's a simple answer. I think two things have coalesced over modern times to make it very difficult for towns like this to be self-reliant as they were very recently. 40 years ago. One thing is the education system. I think it's had a profound effect. And it seems to be absolutely no doubt that people get educated to find a job.
An employer.
And you don't get educated in any way to tell you how to set up your employment. Not at all. Nothing at all on that. But the second thing is that the government has permeated by taxation has practically taken over all functions that the town once carried for itself. Therefore, the people here are not involved in their own energy or anything else anymore. It all comes through the pipeline from their taxes, including their wages. Largely, in this town, it's a tax-paid town.
What's happening is that other people are now starting to pay for the town and all that, and... this is getting right through the society. So actually, the people that are doing the work pay tax are unfortunately getting less and less, and they're getting more and more pissed off, and they're leaving in droves too. So I don't think it's quite simple.
Most people are right. Just stick their neck out and do something different. Mm-hmm. And have other people say, you're not doing the same as us.
Yeah, it's obvious. I think it's obvious that neither Andrew nor I nor Rennie or any of the people who sort of get involved here are dying of starvation or leading an unhappy life or trudging down the mill. We have some secret and unknowable source of income, it seems. The Communist Party must pay us to stay here, or our mothers or something. But that extends not only to people here, but to people in the city wanting to come out. They won't make that jump either, because they think they'll die when they move.
They do die.
We never had one die on this.
I had a really intelligent top-level town planner, and he went out on his own against his consultancy. He made a fortune. He could only last a year. He was miserable. He had a terrible time because he didn't have an infrastructure there saying, hey, that's good, John. You're doing really well. All he had was all this money coming in, and he couldn't cope with it. He had to go
back
to work. Oh, there are different reasons and different problems.
One of their main little fundraising is done purely voluntary, of course, with the timing of the turnout, but one of the, there's always someone elected to do this, but one of the things they have is a bookshop. And they, they just import so many, like 20 copies or something like this, or 30, and they get them shit cheap because they're an organisation, and they flog them out to the, well, actually mainly the members of the thing, but they are a bookshop, and they save the big markup to the thing, but there's still a profit in it for the...
Oh, sure, there's now, a 65%. No, and I'll tell you why.
All these things, I'd like to be able to buy a whole heap of
these. Yeah, I'm sure we could sell them to you if we wanted to too, but I'll tell you why we don't. There are three of us basically at work here, And we have more work than we can do. And the last thing we are looking for is additional work of any sort.
No, I'm saying there's an opportunity.
We're fully employed, over-employed, right? If anybody wanted to come here and open a bookshop, then we'd be very pleased. We could help them, knock them down to a lot of overseas publishers, translators, all sorts of people, because that's part of
it.
It
could be run out of any state
anyway. No problem. It's a very large mail order business just dying here. We kick it along sometimes, but it mainly dies. Andrew doesn't want it, I don't want it, and Rennie doesn't want it. What we're pointing out here is that there are a huge number of empty spaces in this society for occupations. For instance, I don't suppose 10% of the food of this town would be grown here, would it? Just in supplying the town, there's a market garden potential out there in the swamp that went right over your heads. I used to run one at Smithton, and I fed about 400 people out of it, and I made about $400 a day, something like that. That's out there on the swamp. Anybody wants to take up a market garden acre can have it, and that you can't work more than an acre of market garden. There are many other occupations absolutely dead empty. We've got a real problem. If you look at that map that the Wilderness Society put out, it shows 4,800 unemployed in this district out of 17,000 or something. And yet a lot of occupations just laying there. So I don't know what is quite happening. I think we've got a philosophical problem.
It's almost like it's still too easy for people to not bother about getting into a self-determination sort of situation.
Right, now let's take that to its end point and let us, and we can easily relapse on to, say, some sort of government support here. We could either go flat out for government grants, which we could get, or we could become unemployed and take much more salary out than we take out of our own enterprises. I think the basic wage is about $53 a week or something, $60 per
$70.
We take 50, we only took 18. We live ourselves below that just to show that you live a good life below the dole. So we've got a curious sort of a problem, and I don't have any smart answers to how you cure it.
I think it would probably come out of necessity. At the moment it's still too easy to rely on the dole, but in time...
Well, it may be a very good idea if we all went on the dole. The whole lot of us.
Just to press the point.
Yeah, and break it all down. That would be the end of it, wouldn't it? Who would pay the taxes to pay the dole?
That's the point I was getting at. It is broken down.
Yeah. Well, when there's 5,000 on the dole in this district and 17,000 people...
Mm. But they're still managing in Sweden or somewhere, aren't they, with a fantastic amount on the dole and the people that are working are paying more than half their wages in tax, and yet they, from what you read, they're still surviving all right.
No, I don't think they are surviving all right. I think they're a highly stressed and ever-dwindling group. I think they're the group who are migrating out. As far as we know, the migration out of the workforce is not by what we could typify as a hippie. It's migration out of the workforce by decent middle-class, upper-middle-class, married people with small families. They're getting out. It's the wage earners who are leaving the place, the city.
Maybe the answer is to not have any full-time employment, have it all casual employment, so that you've got 3 or 4 days a week to spend on yourself and your own interests.
It's what we are proposing here in terms of...
Your own interest can be the money.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
But then you've got the time to promote it, whereas a 9 to 5, Friday, you don't have that.
So we throw up the portfolios of possible livings from running computer programs occasionally to overseas publishing adventures or trade. We can set up interesting trading adventures from this port, give you lots of tropical experience in India or something, carting things to and fro. All very possible from here. were opening a modest trade system to India by boat. All very exciting occupations. A lot of them right livelihoods, doing good while you're doing while you're making good. And nobody comes. What is it though? When you look around the town, for instance, what is their own thing? We know an old guy around there busy putting up crabs and making little fossilised crabs, but he doesn't sell them very often, does he? There's a few little gardens. One you can buy some food from, tiny little thing. What is their own thing?
Well, stuck a Nobody got down to the nitty-gritty of what actually happened, what the real production problems were, and what the real problems were. There's a lot of condescension there between racial groups interfering with the problem and complicated the whole thing. But my solution to that at that time was to just leave that thing alone, make sure they knew what opportunities there were and leave them alone. And eventually they came up with that, their own stream. It's a different situation where they're out in the bush on their own. There's a basis there of self-reliance with that's traditional.
I think this would be typical of Australian society. This is about as self-reliant as a bloody Cupid doll in hell.
Yeah, yeah,
frankly.
And it's worse for the too. That what's really sad is that the Aborigines in the Kempsey district are even more.
Well, Melbourne's about as self-reliant as a sort of celluloid doll in hell. It's not. It's.
We're getting a bit away from the point.
No, we're not actually.
There and to solve the problem of how to stop people from being apathetic.
I think there's so much apathy in a place like Melbourne. I think that's where the potential is to get people from Melbourne to here and leave the
alone. Well, we have contemplated that, and maybe in a sense we at various times we come up to it. We've never done it full on. We simply offer spaces here to people who really want to do things. I think there's two ways you can work. I think both may happen. I think you can offer spaces to your local community, which you know is a intelligent thing to do. We tend to do that quite a lot. Or you can say anybody wants some space can come here, and that's also happening, I think, will happen more. But that means it's no longer the local community, because as they die and migrate, and they do that fairly fast around here, they're pretty old, then it doesn't become that community anymore.
Well, has anybody, I mean, apart from yourself with a canal span loading, has anybody apart from all the imports around here got involved in it?
Oh, John Iceman and a few other people who live here have been involved with us. Yeah. They're all imports in the long term.
Load? I mean, have we managed to convince anything? Because I'm coming to a point that I don't think there are many involved, are there?
I don't think there are many Stanley people, actually. No, I think that what's happened to Stanley is that it's become a kind of a retirement place because poor people can live here, and a kind of hangout place for people who drift. And that's there isn't really a population here. It's interesting, I don't know whether I have it. Did you ever know where I put that map of the titles of the town? I sat in a room one day and I did a little coloured in all the titles in the town like a little Monopoly game. And there are only us here. There's a few fishermen, and there's really no one else. There's a lot of grey power. You colour it all grey. Maybe there isn't anyone here. I think of that. Well, over there was a single mother. There's somebody next door works at the mill, and there's a sort of single father. Then there's, on you go. Maybe there's no one here.
Are all these people are losing
family? Well, it's a good place not to have to put out too much. You're pretty automatically on the dole because there's no employment.
Twilight zone.
And living is cheap because no one can buy anything expensive.
Come to the twilight zone.
Twilight zone.
You're really getting down to the basis of the problem. That's exactly what it is. We said before it was a motivational problem, but now it looks like it's people that are not likely to have any motivation at all. It's not a normal population.
I don't know whether there is such a thing.
Very large amounts of money being poured into it, and there's no motivation to survive because it's all being treated.
The problem I have is a lack of autonomy.
Have we all become Aborigines in a sense? Are we all on some sort of handout that takes away any need for us to make any effort at all?
Yes, that's true in society.
That's what's happening.
Are we all Aborigines? Because the way to bring a nation down is to feed it money, give everybody $50 a week, $100 a week. That'll be the end of you.
Control of your own affairs has gone out of your hands. Give it socialist.
Yeah.
It's saying that it's a corporate socialist state.
All in the hands of employers.
They're not sustainable. Yeah, and not sustainable. And that's the point, that when there's a mass realisation that it's not sustainable and we've got to let go of it.
Or when it really becomes non-sustainable,
and
then there's no infrastructure for sustainability. Mm. And an interesting comment from some of the small German towns, and I got it independently from German and Holland in the small villages, was that neither of the villages that I was talking about, where there were people who talked to me independently, had noticed that there was either First or Second World War. They said that it was though it never happened. Planes would go over, there would be explosions somewhere. Their life was actually slightly improved during the war. The reason was they started up some of the old soap-making machines and things that they'd neglected, and they had better soap and better food than they'd had when there wasn't a war. Meanwhile, we know that Holland and Germany were starving. But it seemed as though the villagers were actually at an improved living level because they were cut off. Now, they said that it will no longer be possible, because what happened after the Second World War was a lot of trendies brought into the villages, and they got the old oil presses and things, and they put flowers in them and put them out on the front lawns. And so all the tools of self-reliance were used as decorations and actually made inoperable. They lost whole parts of them. And then they did another thing. All the villagers had their food infrastructure, and they cleaned it out and put in natives, I suppose we'd call it, put in decorative plants. Therefore, the food infrastructure also disappeared. So they said, next time there's a war, there's no survival here. And that's true also here.
Mm.
I think that's almost literally true.
Mm.
Well, there's stuff lying in antique shops, like I've spotted a treadle woodlathe that's operable, you know, beautiful condition, ready to use. But it's sitting there waiting for somebody to put it in a fancy corner and just, as you said, maybe put some flowers over it or something.
Or hang it up in a cafe in town, where you see most of the broad axes and all the things that you have to use.
Well, what I want to say is that you can't, it's very difficult to change the entrenched attitudes like that publican
stuff. Oh, here's an example of a family who for three generations have been publicans. They've never done anything but stand behind the bar. Just forget him for a minute.
No, but I'm just saying, I was only using him as a reflection of an attitude of mind, that was all, not just as a model. But in other words, I wouldn't bother wasting breath trying to convince him about anything anyhow.
He's not capable of anything.
Yeah, so amplify the attitude, isn't it? I was wondering if so the local teachers have been taking kids through here and been showing what opportunities there are and all this sort of thing, just getting other children. Has any attempt been made to do this?
No, not by local teachers. Local teachers are not local teachers. They're exotic teachers with short term here. It's a punishment area for teachers.
No, I know. Yeah,
we'll send you to Stanley.
But I'm suggesting, I mean, it's appalling that they haven't bothered to contact you with this going on. I mean, if you were in my area, I'd be hounding you. But the point is, you can't let them destroy the futures of the young people anyhow through their own ignorance. I think it would be terrific if the young people could see what we've seen and get to understand. You know, that kids love that raving, you know, like, what could you do thing? They would sit around and they would rave like we did. They'd come up with those sort of things. They love doing that.
At present, the most constructive thing I've done is form a little, what, six-member gang and knock over almost every place in the town.
What sort of structure do you have sitting on the swamp? Like when you say there's openings for people can come in and utilise those openings.
Well, we had a short and a long report. You may have seen this. This is a copy of the short report down in where you stay.
Yeah.
It simply says what the swamp is, how it's held, that you can move in and nominate a occupation there and go through life.
You were saying in the town you had some things falling down here, like the food gathering in Melbourne and all this, right? Kids do it. You can get kids to do a lot of things like that. Like one of the things you need.
Oh, we used to run around town all the time and people bought bones. This town was littered with bones. There was no dump, and everybody ate meat, so the whole place started to pile up with bones, you know. And there were a lot more dogs, eh? So there was just great bones everywhere, and they used to pay us to collect them, and we collected them like crazy.
Anyhow, what I was suggesting is some of the opportunities, such as if you do get some trout, you want them caught, like a kid can find out what they're worth, it really turn on their little entrepreneurial mind. You could get kids started on those things.
Yeah, maybe we make the children into the income earning groups.
Yeah, why not?
I've got no objection to that at all. We're not age or sex. Well, so there's a very powerful thing coming through. We found difficulty here, even amongst people who know us very well, is that the expectancy is that we will do something. It's up to us to do something, make a nice show for everybody else to go and say, well, look, they did.
When you're a great big crashing, success and thousands are going through here and all this stuff, they'll be saying, oh, it's our Mollison,
No, they won't.
I don't think so. I think they'll say, I must have a secret money source, the government must have done it, or something like that. I honestly don't think that's the case either. I think...
Your picture is going to be up on the wall of the Panther.
See, but at that time he might be the publican.
Oh, that's all that matters to us. Yeah. It's not for show.
And they got, I got the tapes. I reckon it should be made similarly. I went and got some tapes on that. It's true with the turn. You know,
But then we come to problem number sort of four, which is sort of weird. You get something running really well, and it, you could run it bigger. You can't, just two of you or three of you. And you can say fairly confidently, there's $3 million. Nobody wants it. So at the point where you get something running well, and you can say, you know, fairly confidently, you can make a couple of $1 million, people just lollop around and they say, well, we haven't got any money to spend to make $3 million, or I haven't got any time or something. It seems to me as though we've sort of lost, there's some lack of ability to manage finances crept in because people have been employed for so long or something.
They're so easily sucking into these other things, like the, what was that great pyramid thing? Amway's still going, that's legal.
Amway's going in the town. Ah, yeah, we have our little problems here. I think, nevertheless, we'll stick it out here. Yeah, we'll probably stick it out here indefinitely as a base. Some sort of a base. Oh, it's all right, it'll do. Well, we might start another base somewhere else.
Come on, North Coast,
don't
we? No. Bill, there was something you mentioned a few days ago, which is probably not really appropriate, but it struck me that a lot of people do here do have access to land, and a lot more people out there have access to land. What are they doing with it? Yeah.
I think it's very interesting. We should possibly do it. We should have done it for the whole lot of, because the people have been through this courses, I think it looks like they've got, you know, 500,000 or 600,000 acres or something tucked away somewhere. Well, yeah, it could if the land had anything going on it. If we developed our land. Which we haven't. Nobody's done that. There isn't a significant product in the alternative coming to us without it. So I think maybe the last 3 days of the course may be more important. Seems to be problems not in knowing what to do, not in being able to work out what to do. That seems to be all nice and clear. Not even in having to research what to do, because it's been largely been researched and we can adopt it over. We don't have to reinvent a wind machine. There's plenty on the market. It's quite reliable. But in actually making it happen, I think, is a lot of the problem that's facing us. I think part of that problem is we're going on buying land. But if we looked at the total capital that we in this room have sunk in land, and that might be an interesting exercise if we did it secretly, it would be appalling. It would be a few $1 million. Although we apparently stand still here, I think we've paid off, I don't know, a lot of assets. I don't know what we'd sell them at now, $250,000. Yeah, we'd probably sell them at double that if we sold them. So therefore, you know, since we've been here, it's only 3 or 4 years, 4 or 5 years, is it going on? 50 years. We've paid all that off. Maybe that's where all our capital has been going, and that's where it will always go if we always go on acquiring land and buildings and never, ever using them, any of them. Seems to me as though we were badly informed. Now, it would be okay providing you could get fair access to land. What seems to have been our past problem was that even if we bought this land, other people wouldn't feel comfortable on it. That's not the case here. And people obviously feel comfortable. They go out there and work individually on the land. Even if they're visiting, they don't feel uncomfortable on the land because it's in a public trust. And anyone can go out there and work, is free as we are. So maybe we should look more at discouraging people from putting capital into land and set up safe land access systems, I think. And then use the capital that those people, the next few million people are about to put into land. I think some, I don't know what the last estimate is, there are 40,000 desperate Sydney-siders buying their way out now. There's another few $1 billion going to land.
Sydney's population has crashed, actually.
There's a lot more wanting out than are out.
Yeah, but a lot of them have gone. It's way down.
A lot of them are still going.
They missed their chance.
No.
Yeah,
I think Melbourne and Sydney are starting to lose population.
No,
they census, aren't they?
The last statistics for the first time in the history of the census taking, there was a net gain in rural areas of less than 1,000
people. Yeah, I think it's the first time in our history of census that the cities are showing a drop. That is a universal, it's not just Australia.
So we've got to the point that access to the land is not the problem. It's the organisation of people working together.
And I think there is a capital problem. A problem of capital expenditure on the land. Yeah.
A lot of money being spent ought to be redirected.
Correct. Not to purchase more land, but to develop land already purchased. Yeah.
Well, the land is there, it's not going anywhere, is it?
No, not going anywhere. Forward or backward or sideways.
Some of it's going in the sea.
Some of it's going in the sea, yeah.
The economics is set up based on the sale of real estate rather than the development of it.
Well, we could probably do, we could probably hang around till lunchtime when he's probably getting lunch ready. What's the time?
Well, it's pretty bad.
12. She'll be there. We can do our observational prac. I'd rather do it on decent sort of themes. I think it's more value to us to do themes. And we will tackle land access ourselves before Friday and just deal with finances on Friday and Saturday. And Saturday afternoon, when we're all running down, we'll just have a more open discussion, I think, about problems that we see. But something else we like to do before the course breaks up, so you better be prepared, is to say, for each of us to say what we might be doing, and for some of us who feel like it, to say what we will be doing. We can say what we will be doing.